Colonel Rob Manis has a lifelong record of providing dedicated service to this nation. Having worked his way up from the enlisted ranks to full colonel, he served our country for more than 32 years. He has served as a bomber squadron commander, bomb disposal technician, Joint Chiefs of Staff Operations Officer, assisted the National Security Team with the campaign plan for the Global War on Terrorism. He authored the first theater nuclear war plan and served as the Vice Commander of America's largest airborne intelligence wing. Colonel Rob Manis is a true American hero. This is Rob Manis Live.
Equal when it comes to calls for violence or acts of violence. You have done an amazing job of digging through the data. And what did you find?
All right. So, Geraldo, see if you find this compelling.
Okay.
All right? So it seems to me that there are three main sources that you hear a lot. Compelling.
Okay.
Right? So it's either there are three main sources here from Dreamy led prove that the problem we have right now of political violence is a problem. There's the Cato Institute, there's the Prosecution Project out of the University of Cincinnati, and then there's the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Now, these are all always shared by the likes of The Economist, The Wall Street Journal today shared Center for Strategic and International Studies. The problem is when you dig down into that data, it is so deeply flawed. Let me just give you a few examples, okay? The Prosecution Project, supposed to list all of the acts of political violence in America, does not list Charlie Kirk's assassination, does not list Trump's assassination attempts, does not list any George Floyd violence. 24 Americans lost their lives during those riots, not listed. But every white nationalist who's a drug dealer, that gets listed. So they list 33 white Aryans, Aryan Nation people, who had a meth lab. This is political violence because they happen to be white nationalists. All right, Cato does not list the 9/11 victims, does not list any George Floyd violence. Center for Strategic and International Studies, where does it get its data from? The ADL, highly partisan, and the Southern, which just was revealed to have allegedly been funding the very racists that they were supposed to be fighting. And finally, I just have to mention this, the Center for Strategic and International Studies has in its methodology section, it says all anti-Semitism is right wing. Any attacks on Jews or Jewish institutions, they reclassified it. If it was in the name of Palestinians, they reclassified it as ethno-nationalist. Mm-hmm. So by their definition, there's no such thing as left-wing anti-Semitism, which we all know is just nonsense. This is the data. It is flawed. Shame on the Wall Street Journal and shame on The Economist because they're giving a flawed view. And I totally agree with Katie. We can't, it would be so nice to say kumbaya, we all share the problem. You cannot fix a problem if you are lying about what it is.
Welcome back to the Rob Manis Show. It's Whistleblower Wednesday, and we're live on WorldViewTube and X-Spaces simulcast. Well, the topic today right there couldn't be more urgent. Political violence. And no, folks, the left and the right are not the same in this issue. You just saw the clip. The data is intentionally skewed. The mainstream media and the radical left keep pushing this false both sides narrative, but the facts keep proving them wrong. Just look at what's happening right now. Democrat officials and their allies are openly calling for violence against political opponents. The Southern Poverty Law Center, she got cut off, her words did, but she mentioned the Southern Poverty Law Center data being used. It keeps manufacturing fake hate groups to smear conservatives. They fuel this narrative. And they've actually incited real-world attacks, just like they did with Charlottesville. Let that sink in. The same poisonous rhetoric helped lead to the assassination of Charlie Kirk shortly after the SPLC put him on their list and named TPUSA chapters as extremist groups. And now we've got James Comey indicted again, and rightly so. This isn't random. It's a pattern. One side is using violence and intimidation as a political tactic. That's the definition of terrorism, folks. The other side is trying to win elections and save the country based on their policies. They're not all good. I get it. They are not the same. And pretending they are is how the left gets away with it. To cut through the lies and get to the truth, we're joined again by veteran TV news producer, Substack host at The Analyst, former diplomat and current anchor for Real American Sunrise, the real American Sunrise early edition. I think he's still doing it. And the NewsHour weekend edition on 77 Talk Radio WABC out of New York, Jake Novak. Jake, welcome back to the show.
So much. It's a long list of jobs, but I'm just a talking head. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but you're a smart talking head, my friend. That's why I keep having you back on this show. Let's spend this hour tearing this apart, because I'm so tired, especially of people that should be my allies, people that should be that are supposedly politically on the same side of the aisle as me, that buy into this crap about, both sides need to just tone it down. Well, yeah. I mean, what's your take on this whole data thing? I mean, we've known about it for a long time. We've talked about it for years and years and years. But now that this SPLC indictment's been handed down, it really shines a spotlight on the reality of the situation.
Well, I have good news and bad news for you. Something that really came clear to me just in the last couple of days since this White House Correspondents' Dinner shooting. Colonel, I think that the days of the left pretending that they are not the primary purveyors of political violence and the whole gaslighting and all the slanting of this phony data, I think those days are coming to an end. That's the good news. The bad news, the reason why it's coming to an end, is that they know they're starting to not care as much about being branded in that way. There, you may have noticed, after this White House Correspondents' Dinner shooting, there were fewer and fewer denials from the left about how this is really not them. This didn't happen. There was basically, and there was a lot more cheering of it, actually. Some people naively thought that because it was done and potentially endangered a lot of the people in the media, that they would be more circumspect about it. A couple were for a little while. But I think that right now we're this close to the left openly admitting that they openly admitting, not just before the acts, but also after the acts, that they are supporting violence in this country. I think we're getting closer to that. At least we'll have clarity. Of course, the bad news is that's not where we want to go as a country. You know, I've been saying for several weeks, actually months, that at least among the political class in this country, we are at the bleeding Kansas state of a pre-Civil War moment in this country. I don't think that average Americans are coming to blows with each other, but politicized Americans, and certainly the members of the political class, have been doing so for quite some time. Now my question is, when will we openly have violence among the political class? In other words, not just some person barging into the White House Correspondents' Dinner, but when will there be a member of the media or a member of Congress who will now physically attack one of their colleagues? I think we're close to that. I have some thoughts about who might be likely to do it, but I hope that it ends there. But all I can tell you is I've seen this movie before. I'm a student of the Civil War like you are, and it's following a similar pattern.
Well, even before the run-up to the Civil War, we've routinely had political opponents hitting each other with canes on the floor of the House of Representatives. Not so much in the Senate that I remember from my studies, but just explain to the audience, because our knowledge of American history or any history these days is pretty weak. What does Bleeding Kansas mean?
Yeah, so Bleeding Kansas was, as many people might know, even if they don't have the greatest education, as the United States was expanding as a country and we declared certain territories before they became states, in the years leading up to the Civil War, there was a big debate about whether a new territory, when it would be admitted as a territory, would be a slave territory or a free territory. And Kansas was one of those places where there was a pretty decent split among the settlers about whether they wanted it to be slave or non-slave as a territory. And they started to kill each other regularly. They formed militias. They were really coming to more than just blows. They were firing shots. They were stabbing each other, et cetera, et cetera. This was the mid to late 1850s. In 1856, at the height of this controversy going on in the country, an abolitionist senator from Massachusetts, Charles Sumner, really, really went at it in a speech on the floor of the Senate against the pro-slavery Democrats from the South. And he specifically named one senator from the South, Senator Butler from South Carolina. One of Butler's friends from South Carolina who was in the House, that's why you were confused, because it was a House member who crossed over into the old Senate chamber, took a cane, and beat Charles Sumner within an inch of his life. It took Sumner 3 years before he could return to the Senate. He was almost killed. He actually ended up living longer than the man who attacked him. Preston Brooks died of a coughing fit about a year later, ironically. But anyway, I do believe, sadly, that we could see a couple of members of Congress. I don't know if it'll be in the House or the Senate. I know some people who might be attacked. I can think of some of them. And I have no doubt that it will be a Democrat who will physically attack a Republican, just like it happened in 1856. I can't tell you where or when, otherwise I'd be betting on it on Polly Market. You know, I'm only kidding. I don't like those bets on Polly Market. I think they're disgraceful. But I'm sorry, I've seen this before, and I'm seeing the way that some of the members of the Senate, like a Cory Booker, the way that he becomes almost apoplectic when he gives speeches now. This is a man who's very close to committing an act of violence. You heard it here first.
Oh, wow. Naming names. You know, we've got to do that more, Jake. Let me ask you, my memory is kind of weak on John Brown, but didn't he come out of Kansas?
Well, John Brown was kind of a multiple state guy. Yeah, obviously his attack was based in the western part of Virginia. This is before Virginia was split into two states. When the pro-slave part of Virginia remained the most in Virginia, and then West Virginia, which was mostly anti-slavery, split off during the Civil War. So, the Harper's Ferry attack was what is now in West Virginia, but was regular Virginia then. John Brown had a lot of different addresses. He was kind of an itinerant, and he was a little bit of a kook. Obviously, you know, and basically one of the reasons why he only posthumously became a hero was because people like Frederick Douglass abandoned him. Frederick Douglass was basically stepped away from John Brown in the days before the attack, something that a lot of people continue to criticize Douglass for. But, you know, John Brown was absolutely lionized in the North. In fact, the Union League Club, which is a fancy club, is actually mostly Republicans. It remained a Republican club even to this day, has a lock of his hair in a frame hung on their wall. The Union League Club is on 37th Street in Manhattan, a neighborhood called Murray Hill. I'm sure most people don't know that. Whether or not you condone what John Brown was about to do or not, it was indicative of the times. There were people who were planning on doing this, but he was an outlier. Most of the violence was coming from the pro-slave groups, as Fort Sumter, of course, proved a year later.
Well, that's a whole other show, that activity at Fort Sumter and what the causality of that is, because I don't think we agree totally on that one. But your point about the political violence against each other, that is happening. There is an Antifa group called the John Brown Gun Club out in the Northwest that specifically focuses on arming people and training them to fight the Republicans under Donald Trump. You know, so I mean, it is happening as we speak. And those words, that group, I haven't thought about that group in a long time, but they're there and they're spreading. It's spreading across the nation. And then you have what we started with in this segment in the show with, and why I want to dig into it some more, that's the data piece of it. How on earth, and I'll leave this question and then we'll go to the break, how on earth can we fight for the truth and know what the truth is so that we can take a side with the truth if the entire set of institutions that we've spent 250 years building are lying to us? And that appears to be what's happening. We'll be right back with Jake Novak.
We'll be right back. Kate, Jim Comey is expected to go back to that federal courthouse where he previously beat a set of criminal charges to face this new indictment. He faces two counts. One is for threatening the president, and the other is about transmitting that threat over interstate commerce lines, so posting it on the internet where people all over the nation and the world could see it. This new development this morning is that he is going to be self-surrendering. So the FBI or the U.S. Marshals are not going to pick him up and arrest him. But Comey is expected to be placed under arrest. We're still waiting to hear timing on when he will appear in court. But in this situation, he is going first to the Eastern District of Virginia's federal courthouse to appear before a judge there. That's because he lives in that district, so we expect him to be in that area. But the case itself, it's out in North Carolina, in the court district that covers the beaches there. The judge that will oversee it is a judge that has been on the bench for quite some time, but we'll see exactly how things go today. We know that Comey expects to mount quite a significant defense to this. The Justice Department has said that they took this very seriously as a threat, and this post, 8647 in Seychelles, they looked into for 9 or 10 months. The grand jury approved the indictment. But Comey, he said he never intended any harm.
In a show, it's Whistleblower Wednesday. My guest is political commentator, radio host on WABC Radio, Jake Novak. And Jake, the dirty little secret is the information and the data, period. Comey, that's current news, so I wanted to play it. We'll talk about it. But Comey was the head of the FBI when they set up a formal agreement with the Southern Poverty Law Center to share data. A formal agreement. That's the dirty little secret here that we're talking about. Is that this bad data has infiltrated even government institutions. I don't remember how many times the SPLC visited the Oval Office under the Biden administration, but it was a significant number, folks. You can go back and grok it if you trust an AI, use grok and see how many it was. But it was multiple times, in the tens or 20s, maybe. That is a major challenge, especially for like this case. They're gonna go in with data and information that is tainted by the misinformation that's inside the bad data.
The Southern Poverty Law Center, for those people who are just finding out about it, that's one of the biggest frustrations for me. There have been voices calling out and red flagging the SPLC for many, many decades. Mm-hmm. Many, many decades. I think that the last time that the SPLC was really a good organization and doing really good work was probably the mid to late 1980s. Yeah. Since the 1990s, at least, it has been a very partisan political organization, tainting their own data. And anyone who was really serious about getting to the bottom of things knew not to trust them. But if you were serious about using them to use their data and find a group that would be willing to skew their data for your political purposes, then they became very useful to you. The SPLC even smeared my own father. My father was an expert witness in that Judge Roy Moore case with the Ten Commandments in Alabama. Mm-hmm. My dad was just called to the court. He didn't know Judge Roy Moore. He didn't have much of a dog in that fight, but he was an expert on the provenance of the Ten Commandments and how in ancient times it was considered civil law and not really a specific religion's law. And an SPLC lawyer got up and tried to smear my dad as some kind of religious fanatic simply because he was ordained in addition to being a professor. It was really an ugly moment. Colonel, that was 25 years ago. So I was alerted to their nonsense that long ago. And the last straw for me with the SPLC was when they decided to call Ayaan Hirsi, who was a Muslim woman who was physically abused during her entire childhood and adolescence in the Muslim mm-hmm. world, left Africa, came to the United States, is a spokesperson for just kind of people who have been victims of Islamic violence against mm-hmm. women. She doesn't go into the DNA. She's not racist in any way. And the Southern Poverty Law Center many years ago labeled her as a hate criminal. They should have been absolutely defunded at that moment by every single group. And instead, they only got more money. And I think the reason why, Colonel, is they showed in that instance right there that they'd be willing to say anything or do anything for the right amount of money and the right amount of attention. And in D.C., as you well know, Colonel Maness, people who are willing to do that, organizations that are willing to bend whoever the political will, whoever wants to bend them, they're invaluable, aren't they? Sadly, but true.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the, you know, look, before 2016, their annual revenues were somewhere around $50 million a year. And if you go look at them today, you're talking over $300 million. Over $300 million because people think that they're like the on the side of right. Not right as in right left, but on the side of right. You know, doing the right thing. And they haven't done that. I remember seeing the founder, and I can't remember his name. It's escaping me right now. But I remember seeing him and learning about this group in the early 80s. And where he was, he had a little African-American boy with him, and they went to court on behalf of this kid, and other kids, something about segregation and those kind of things. Well, that's the right kind of fight. That has nothing to do with them today. And it has everything to do with that. They were actually feeding the FBI and the White House this data that they're paying people like the KKK and one of the leaders of the Unite the Right rally at Charlottesville, which Joe Biden said he ran on that fake riot at Charlottesville and smeared Donald Trump with it. And all of us, anybody that supports Donald Trump at all, is automatically smeared with that as Nazi and everything. And they were funding it. You know?
I wasn't even joking in 2020, Colonel Maness, when I said that the rightful Democratic nominee for president was Jesse Smollett, because what he did with that hoax in Chicago, that ridiculous hoax where, you know, he was basically trying to find a way to get himself back on the television, was part and parcel of what the Democratic Party was all about. And that was before the George Floyd riots and the other stuff that they were bringing up. Jesse Smollett, this is the party of Jesse Smollett, the party of lies, the party of smearing people. And I've always felt that people who fake a hate crime should get a minimum of 10 years in prison, and organizations that create a culture of fake hate crimes should get really, should be, the people behind it should get life in prison. Here's why. Because a fake hate crime that gets publicity establishes the same goals as a real hate crime. It creates terror and fear and sadness among that group that was supposedly targeted, even though it wasn't. But on top of that, it smears innocent people as well, and it creates this notion of a country that's more hateful than it really is. The day after Donald Trump won the election in 2016, I wrote an editorial for CNBC. It was very, very heavily read, where I said, don't believe this emerging narrative that Trump won because of some strong, nascent, but really, really powerful racism in this country. It's not true. Of course we have racism. Of course we have problems. But I was already starting to see a pattern of this kind of nonsense. Of course, no one listened to me. That's exactly what half the country ended up believing. And because it wasn't true, Rob, they spent the next several years trying to create it and make it true. They didn't succeed in that, but they did succeed in convincing more people that it was true. And how sad is that? I mean, these people really, there's a punishment for these people that I mean, more than years in prison, there should be even more harsh punishment for some of these people, because the effect of their crimes is almost immeasurable.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It is. And James Comey is guilty. He is guilty of that crime that you just talked about right now, because you can't tell me that a guy that's that intelligent, that rises to that level of success, didn't understand that the SPLC's data was wrong, that it was painting a false picture that half the country was white racist extremists. And that data was used by the United States military and the President of the United States, forcing the military to take extremism training that only talked about white Christian males being extremists. I know that because my son, one of my sons, had to take the training as an NCO. It's the reason he left the active forces. As he said, Dad, it's just wrong.
It's just laughable, too. I mean, yeah. Here in New York in 2019, when there was a rise, a significant start in the rise of violent attacks against Jewish people, especially in Brooklyn,
And we had video of the perpetrators. They weren't white. And you still had the then mayor of New York City, de Blasio, Bill de Blasio, literally go in front of a news conference and say that this was the result of the KKK. The fact that he wasn't laughed out of the room, and some people did laugh, actually. I was there. Some people did laugh. But the fact that everyone didn't just laugh him out of the room was actually scarier than to me than the violent acts. Because the violent acts happen, and it's terrible. But the fact that you had a mayor with this Orwellian, this is the work of the KKK, when every video showed that it was not even a white person who would attack these Jewish victims, you know, I thought to myself, this is really the point now where they are going to tell us stuff that just these Smollett narratives are just run of the mill. Now you've got mayors and governors and FBI directors who are parroting this nonsense. Yeah. And that, of course, the scariest part about it is it gives a tremendous free pass to the people who continue to do this violence. They read that loud and clear, Colonel. They know darn well that if they're not even going to be blamed for it by the politicians when there's video evidence of who did it, boy, that is that's a green flag for them to, green light for them to continue doing it.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You know, the fake news people, you mentioned you were kind of surprised that nobody laughed him out of the room. Well, the media, that's one of the reasons why I agree with President Trump when he says the media, the corporate media is the enemy of the people. They're our enemy because they refuse to do that exact thing. Laugh a politician that tries to do this stuff and use this stuff out of the room and say, no, here's the truth on something. And until the corporate media gets on board, it's just a uphill fight and a battle. I mean, look how they're treating this latest Comey indictment. Look, I got to be honest. I was a little surprised they went down this road, but the process is the punishment, is what James Comey said. And he said that he wanted every single person that went into the Capitol on January 6th tracked down and hounded to the ends of the earth. And I'm only slightly paraphrasing that. Okay. Every person that went into that Capitol, that's what he wanted as the director of the FBI. So the process is the punishment. I don't feel sorry for him at all, but the media is treating it like, oh, this is terrible. It's the worst thing that happened since such and such. It's the same media, and you see clips of people. I think Andrew Weissman was on a clip where he's like, well, Donald Trump's been indicted. It's the right thing to do. It's right for America. And then the opposite today is they're showing that he's saying, no, this is a disaster for the United States and the rule of law, et cetera. Well, no, it's not. Actually, he did what he did, and he deserves to be looked at, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, if there's anybody who knows the dangers that kind of a media post can create, it should be James Comey. He was reading the dossiers of some dangerous kooks probably all the time. And absolutely should have known better. And again, what's even more upsetting is not so much that he initially did it and he must have arranged those shells in that way and he posted it. All that's bad enough.
Yeah.
But he didn't have the decency after this first became a controversy, I guess this was a couple of years ago, to say, you know what, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have done that. Not, I didn't mean violence. He shouldn't have said just that. He should have gone on and say, and I shouldn't have posted it. It was wrong of me to do. And he's never done that. And he's still not saying that, which tells me he's completely unrepentant. He hasn't understood anything. And like almost every other FBI director we've had since J. Edgar Hoover, I mean, good luck finding one who hasn't been corrupt. The whole organization is corrupt. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend that people read a book called Leak. It's a fantastic book, L-E-A-K. It's the truth, L-E-A-K. It's the truth about Deep Throat, who was desperate to become the FBI director. Mm-hmm. It's really an important book. And I read about it, and it describes events of more than 50 years ago, but it couldn't be more current. This is an organization that needs to be disbanded. A federal police force, by its face, is going to be political first, last, and always. Honestly, James Comey isn't even the worst of the FBI directors, but I don't think we've ever really had one that was actually, ethical. It's not possible. It's like having a good head of the Gestapo. It doesn't exist. And I'm not trying to say the FBI is the Gestapo. I'm just trying to say that if you have an entity that isn't moral, you're not going to have a moral leader of it.
When you have the police force that's using secret courts, secret laws, it's a secret police force. And that's what you're talking about.
And that book, by the way, it's written, it's the author is Max Holland. And if you read that book, you will not only understand the FBI and the truth about the Watergate scandal. And don't worry, for those of you who are liberals, it doesn't exonerate Richard Nixon. It simply makes it clear who really was responsible for us finding out the information about what happened at Watergate and how Woodward and Bernstein absolutely did nothing. They did nothing. They uncovered nothing. They did nothing that wouldn't have been revealed by the congressional and the FBI's own investigation. And everything we knew about it through them was because there was somebody who was a number two or number three at the FBI who was jealous that he wasn't the director. And he had no interest in any justice being done. That's an important story because I believe that's the culture of the leadership of the FBI since J. Edgar Hoover really made it into what it was in the 1930s.
I don't disagree with you. We got to take another break. When we come back in the next segment, I want to talk about the political leaders because they may deny it, but you're going to see just yesterday, Caroline Leavitt was calling them out by name on the Democrat side.
News is moving faster than ever, and so are we. Worldview Tube brings you 24/7 live stream coverage and now real-time alerts when it matters most. Once you have the Worldview Tube app installed, exit the app and navigate your way to settings. In settings, locate the tab labeled Notifications. Select the Notifications tab. Scroll down until you locate the Worldview Tube app icon. Select the tab. And here, you can turn on and customize your notification experience for the Worldview Tube app. News doesn't wait, and neither should you. Turn on push notifications to stay informed. Every headline, as it happens.
For years. And so many mentally perturbed individuals are led to believe these words are truth and then are inspired to act on it. I have a whole host of examples that we can share with you after. It is pages and pages of major Democrat Party elected officials saying, such as Rep. Hakeem Jeffries, just this April, this month, said, "We are in an era of maximum warfare everywhere all the time." Governor Josh Shapiro said, "Heads need to roll within the administration." Senator Alex Padilla said people are, quote, dying because of fear and terror caused by the Trump administration. Senator Elizabeth Warren, President Trump is making the country look like a, quote, fascist state. Senator Adam Schiff saying President Trump using a dictator playbook. Senator Ed Markey calling President Trump a dictator, saying that this administration's actions are authoritarianism on steroids. Governor J.B. Pritzker, "Never before in my life have I called for mass protest disruptions. These Republicans cannot know a moment of peace." You have Rep. Presley saying, "We'll see you in the streets." Rep. Monica McIver, a Democrat representative on Capitol Hill, "We will not take this shit from Donald Trump. He thinks he's a dictator. We are at war." These are Democrat elected officials calling for war against the president of the United States and his supporters. I could go on and on. But again, when you have people in positions of power that are saying things like this every single day for years, you are inspiring violence by people who are already mentally ill. And that's what we've seen against this president for far too long.
Welcome back to the Rob Mayna Show. It's Whistleblower Wednesday. You just heard a few of them. If you didn't catch that that presser on Monday afternoon, I believe it was, you got to go back and look at the tape because Ms. Leavitt went on and on and on with the names and what they said. And look, folks, when your political leaders are saying these kinds of things, you shouldn't be surprised when a school teacher is so enthralled and so convinced that the fascists have to be taken out that he gets on an Amtrak train, he buys weapons, he trains with them, he gets on that Amtrak train and rides for 2 days after having made a reservation weeks earlier for the night of the ball. I call it the ball or the prom for the press prom, the White House Correspondents Association dinner, in the DC Hilton, so that he can be inside the outer security ring. Think about that. That's dedication. That is determination. That is audaciousness. And those types of thinking only come about if one is convinced that you are on the side of right and morally correct, and it's the righteous thing to do to save your fellow man by eliminating the Nazis. That's what's going on. And my guest today is Jake Novak, WABC radio host and purveyor of news, real news. So go follow him wherever he's at and listen to his stuff. Now, Jake, I think I did a pretty good job of laying out there. I don't want to use the guy's name, but
yeah,
good golly. The only thing that he really screwed up on was his in-state tactic of the final execution. He misjudged what he was going to have to get through to get into that ballroom to start killing people.
Yeah, and, you know, I really like the way that you laid it out, because this is something that we really need to start doing in America. Basically saying things like as follows. The rhetoric of the left shouldn't just be pushed back upon just because it incites violence. Because, you know, a lot of people will listen to that, Colonel, and say, like, well, yeah, that's the point. Donald Trump is a Nazi dictator, and we should take him out. So we need to start at the source and to start to debunk this stuff. So let's just work with stuff that's objectively true. It is the most ridiculous comment in political discourse I've heard in years to call Donald Trump a dictator. Now, whether he likes it or not, and I don't think he likes this, I really don't. Donald Trump is the most accountable president we've ever had in this country. Does he want to be the most accountable? I don't think so, but it doesn't matter. There is nothing he can say, do, or even think about that isn't scrutinized or pushed back upon, either in the courts, either in the court of public opinion, nothing. There has never been any president, and of course, this is a lot of his own doing because he is so open and honest about what he wants to do. Again, I don't think that he loves this, but it's objectively true. So to call him a dictator is the most ridiculous thing, and that should be immediately pushed back upon. And the No Kings rallies, instead of interviewing the people at the rallies and asking why they're there and having fun with the fact that they have no idea why they're there, they should be shamed. You know, you're just against something that doesn't even exist already. And you are, you know, we've had a lot of history in this world of people who are just against something and not for anything. And it always ends with a lot of dead people. What are you for exactly? What were the communists for? They just said, well, we want to get rid of the imperialists and get rid of the rich upper class. Well, you did that. What did you do that was actually positive? You just killed people. Same thing with the Nazis. We want to kill the Jews, the gypsies, the gays, the disabled. What did you actually build other than you built a nice highway? But other than that, not much. Honestly, that is where we need to start. We need to say, listen, you can be against Donald Trump's policies all you want. That's fine. That's healthy. Great. But if you're going to start with the Nazi dictator king stuff, you embarrass yourself. You're incredibly foolish. Objectively, this guy gets checked and balanced more than any president in the history of this country. And that is absolutely indisputable. So start with that. Because when you start with that delusion, delusional people become violent eventually. And we've got to nip that in the bud. And I think that should be some of the messaging now we hear from some Republicans and conservatives and anyone else who wants to be responsible, no matter what their political affiliation. Can we stop with this nonsense? Because it's just not true. Because that's not what we're hearing right now, Colonel. We're hearing people say, well, you shouldn't say that because it incites violence. Well, that's true. But you also shouldn't say it because it's stupid. It's totally not true. And it makes anyone who repeats it sound like an idiot. That's what we should start with. And yeah, and on top of that, it might incite some crazy person to violence, period.
Yeah, invariably, if it happens enough over time, this is where we get. This is where you get with this guy, so determined, he travels in a train for 2 days. I did it on a 24-hour period from Wisconsin to home down here in Mississippi on the coast after the Republican convention, because all the flight computers went crazy for three days. Yeah. So I hopped on a train. That was arduous, man. I mean, I was determined to get home before any flight that they could reschedule me on to get home. That's how determined I was. You have to be much more determined to do 2 days and then do all this planning and then risk your life to sprint into a ballroom so you could start killing people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. You know, the incitement thing is one thing. Fighting words is another thing. But over time, the propaganda begins to take hold, and it is taking hold in the minds of people like this. And this guy, I wanted to get your take on it, because when I read what he wrote that's called the manifesto, it's really not. It's just a note.
Yeah.
It's a letter. Yeah. Seems like a letter to the people he knows, his family or so. But it's very cogent. It is not full of whacked out ideas or violent inciting verbiage that he might have heard, but it is using, he spouts the talking points that the Democrat leadership uses. We're at war and those kinds of things. And he puts it out there, but it's very well written and it's very calm. And I would say reading it, well, this guy is a mainstream Democrat.
Yeah, he could be a guest on MS Now or CNN any night if he hadn't done this shooting. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, for this kind of delusionary stuff, which, again, delusions don't have to be, oh, there's a space alien coming to get me. The delusions can be, oh, we're at war. This guy is a dictator. He's trying to hurt me. If we had a responsible mental health care establishment in this country, and there are a lot of people who are, but honestly, almost every psychiatrist and psychologist that I know is also afflicted with Trump derangement syndrome. Otherwise, I would say this would be a great opportunity for them to start their own YouTube channel and try to tell people exactly what I just said before, that and no matter how much you don't like some of these policies, first of all, let's enumerate what the real policies are. Here's your imagined policy. He's throwing transgender people in a concentration camp. Okay, that's not true. Here's what he is doing. He's going to take away some of the funding for free surgeries in the Army. See how those two things are different, Mrs. Jones? You know, do that kind of stuff. If I were Scott Jennings, you know, who was the one conservative voice on CNN, I would absolutely bring in a doll on the set tomorrow and put it on the set and say, show me on this doll where Donald Trump hurt you.
Yeah.
Because those are the kinds of things that we do with people who are, and we'll see if they can do that. These people need help. And it's not really a joke. And one of the things that makes it less funny is, I don't know who to send these people to. I wish I could say, but honestly, you know what? All it takes is one psychiatrist. I'd prefer it's someone with also an MD in addition to psychological training. One psychiatrist, male or female, start a YouTube channel and do exactly what I just did. Help these people separate their delusions from reality and give them a more healthy outlet for what they're upset about. And do that. It actually would probably be a big moneymaker, and it would make them a star pretty quickly. I'll try to find one righteous man in Sodom who can do that for us. But honestly, from what I've seen from the mental health care community, most of them, not all, most of them are equally afflicted with this. The ones I would say are an exception are, for example, like nurse practitioners who work in psychiatric ICUs and all day deal with truly violent, insane individuals. They're pretty good at knowing when something is a real threat or not. Maybe we should get one of them. All I can say is the country is dealing with a mental health care crisis. And I hate to say this, Colonel, I'm surprised we haven't seen more incidents like this, because we do have a mental health care crisis in this country that predates Donald Trump, predates a lot of things that we've been talking about. I can't believe we haven't had more people trying to carry out these kinds of things. I'm grateful for that.
Well, unfortunately, I think there are more out there, and you're going to see more and more as time goes on, unless somebody intervenes. And it can't be our side that intervenes. It's got to be leaders on the other side of the aisle that start winding this down and say, wait a minute, folks. You're doing the wrong thing. That's not what we meant. You know, we're gonna do our part to cooperate and talk about things peacefully and try to resolve our differences that way. The way Americans should be doing it, having learned some really hard lessons from the 1860s. Well, we got to take another break. When we come back, we'll see a clip about the SPLC from Greg Gutfeld from 9 years ago. Listen to this when we come back with Jake Novak.
You woke up with a sore throat and a low-grade fever. You know you are getting sick, so here's your choices. You can get sicker and miss work, try to see a doctor this week or sit hours in a crowded waiting room at urgent care.
I have a smarter option for you. Open your medical emergency kit, match your symptoms to doctor-recommended prescription in your booklet, and take the right meds now and get well faster.
This is not a first aid kit. It's like having an urgent care in your home. It includes doctor-prescribed medications to treat over 39 medical issues like respiratory infections, strep throat, pneumonia, UTIs, and more.
No waiting to see the doctor and no standing in line at the pharmacy. It's right here.
Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit, and here's how to order.
Go to worldviewhealthcare.com. Your kit to treat dozens of common and serious illnesses is rushed to your door. worldviewhealthcare.com. That's worldviewhealthcare.com.
The emergency kit available at worldviewhealthcare.com. Make sure you don't have to go to urgent care. I got pneumonia. I didn't have to go. I took this last year. Stayed at home. Went to bed.
So this is funny. You ever heard of the Southern Poverty Law Center? They're a hard left outfit that loves to label people as extremists. Their ever-growing list seems to defame everyone. Ben Carson, he's an extremist. Rand Paul. They called Majid Nawaz an anti-Muslim extremist. And get this, he's a moderate Muslim battling religious extremism. It makes no sense. There's Ursi Hali, a black feminist who protests against genital mutilation. SPLC placed her name in a guide to anti-Muslim extremists. So that's extreme, being against genital mutilation? I wonder what they'd make of Gandhi. But that's not the funny part, it's the money. This poverty center has loads of it, a $320 million endowment, and chucks almost 20% of it into offshore equities, Cayman Islands stuff. I don't understand it. So this poverty group sits on a pile of offshore dough. That's like a personal trainer with a gut. Or a priest with a harem. The center paid out $20 million in salaries in 2015, but provided just $61,000 in legal assistance. So the Southern Poverty Law Center appears to have no poverty and do virtually no law. It's the most misleading name since the Democratic Party. Yes, count it. Worse, their love for calling people haters incites haters into action. The maniac who shot Stephen Scalise liked the Law Center on his Facebook page. And a terrorist who attacked the Family Research Council back in 2012, shooting a security guard, did so after the SPLC labeled them a hate group. He was a fan, too. I don't know, filthy rich, linked to violence. I think the SPLC might end up having to put itself on its own list.
That's it. 9 years ago, folks. 9 years ago. Today's Whistleblower Wednesday. The data is the problem. I'm going to go back to what we started with. All of this discussion today, all of this craziness that's happened is because people are using falsified and skewed and manipulated data to create a false narrative of extremism on one political side in the United States that didn't exist in 2008, by the way. Most people in America thought, man, we got white on black racism killed, especially and confirmed it when Barack Obama was elected. Okay? All of this has been created by using false information backed up by false data. My guest today is Jake Novak for the last segment here. Jake, let's go back to the SPLC and talk about how do they get away with paying people that are, these are not informants. They're trying to say they're informants in the media and the leftist talking points and everything. But these are leaders. They are leaders in the groups that they're paying. And they're paying them. And one guy got over $1 million over a 10-year period, I believe. But in the affidavit, in the indictment, it talks about the Unite the Right rally that the individual was a leader in the leadership chat, that he was asked to do racist incitement posting under the supervision of the SPLC, and then he provided rides of individuals that he selected and groomed to the rally in Charlottesville.
It's just awful. So I think that we've kind of covered the reasons for this. Obviously, this is a
useful organization for Democrats who want to use this narrative for power. So they can create a narrative that they are the righteous ones, that they are the victims, that those Republicans are coddling the real hate in America. I understand the power. But there's one part of this discussion that we haven't had yet that's very difficult to cut into, but I think we should. You know, we have a problem in our minority community in this country, particularly the African-American community. And yes, of course, I'm not myself an African-American, but this is something as an American that has bothered me for many, many years. The fact is, there is a very high homicide rate and abuse rate within the Black community. 99 point whatever percent of Black people are killed by other Black people. So why do they focus so much on that less than 1% of them who are killed by white people or attacked by white people? And the answer is, once again, psychological, Colonel. It's a very tough pill to swallow. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to wake up every morning and have to swallow the fact that my own people are basically committing genocide against ourselves. And I'd be very, very, very tempted to focus on that small, minuscule number that are doing this from outside my ethnic group. You know, it's not like every other ethnic group doesn't have its own problems. I can go on a long list about what my ethnic group has, the Jewish people, but I can tell you, if 99% of Jewish people were killed by other Jewish people, that would be all we talk about all the time, because we complain about each other all the time. Believe me, we would have other problems. Our biggest problem being that we continue to not defend ourselves properly against those who are killing us, and we keep using excuses not to, especially here in the United States. Outside of Israel, that is a huge problem. So it's similar, and we have a similar delusion, a similar problem. But this is the answer, Colonel. The Black community, the people who are truly victimized in this country by their own people, don't want to face that. And they would much rather promote this phony narrative. And politicians are well aware of it, and they are using it for their own power and their own money grab. That is the condition that's created this symptom.
Yeah, and Charlie Kirk talked about that, and he talked about how the Great Society legislation has destroyed the Black family, and that is a correlated and causation to why they're killing each other in such large numbers. And he got deemed a racist and put on the SPLC's list, his organizations did, and then he was murdered by a crazy leftist that believed the narrative. We got a question in the audience. Let's go ahead and take that before we get to the end of the show. Go ahead, Shel.
We have AC Truth, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Novak and Colonel. I've got a question. Do you think that it would be a good idea to have individuals who speak on what we're seeing, the violence from the other side of the aisle, compared to how communists fight when it comes to political battles, and compare this behavior to communism rather than target it as it's the Democrat Party and shame them for taking the tactics of what communists do, so that there's a distinct drawing of the line between those who use violence and use communist tactics versus a regular Democrat voter?
Well, I don't think that most Americans understand what communism is and get it. I think that whoever is going to speak out on it should be educated on that, and they should have that in their back pocket. But in this case, understand that these people who are coming and attacking the right are doing so with emotion, not fact. We should be able to have emotion with facts, but we have to have emotion. One of the only people who posted a video at the No Kings rallies that I thought was effective was that Iranian woman who confronted one of the No Kings protesters who was promoting Iran and saying their support for Iran in a poster. And she just absolutely shrieked at them and said, I was abused in Iran. I had my life destroyed, and now my father died, and I can't even visit his grave. And she had all the facts in her possession as well, but she matched emotion with emotion. So you're absolutely right. I'd like for the people to know that they are using communist tactics. That's good to have in your back pocket. But if you're going to be confronting someone like this, if I could have confronted this shooter at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the first thing I would have said is, you have been lied to. You have been lied to, and they are abusing you. They're trying to take advantage of you and your passions. Your passions are admirable. You want a better country. Good for you. But you have been abused by people who are lying to you. And then I would have started with some of them and how terrible it is. And you should be angry at them.
And I would say that in an emotional tone. And then I would get into all the little bullet point facts. But you've got to meet emotion with emotion first. I just like to have it backed up with facts. But without emotion, these people are just going to walk away and say, like, well, I guess they're accepting my anger. I must be right to be angry. It's like, yeah, no, not at these people.
Yeah, and I don't want to let the Democrat Party off the hook because it's the Bolshevism, Marxism, and communist believers and other forms of tyranny, including Nazism, that has embedded itself in the Democrat Party leadership and in its base, to where it's overcome what we used to consider the Democrat Party. So we have to call it for what it is. All right. The Democrats have moved so far left that they're using Bolshevist tactics very similar to what the Bolshevik Revolution used and the Marxist Revolution against Russia used. And we've seen it used time and time again. That's resulted in the 20th century, 100 million deaths at the hands of governments of communism and Nazism and any other ism backed up by this socialist communist nature of this ideology. And that's what the Democrat Party has become. Its leaders spouting it on a daily basis. Look, Hakeem Jeffries stood before a huge banner that says we're at total war. The day before Donald Trump was the latest attempted assassination, a huge banner. And yesterday I played a video. He said, I'm not backing off of that. We have the right ideas. Of course, then he goes and talks about we want to end the endless wars. We want to reduce inflation and make prices go down. It's our ideas, because he doesn't want to talk about the ideas that led us to this point. You know, saying that men can be girls, that men ought to be allowed to have their swinging new, you know, what's in your daughter's high school or elementary school locker room and their bathrooms. And they can't, your daughters can't complain about it, or their parents will get put in jail. That kind of stuff, you know, driving inflation and prices up so high that we had to have a Republican president of any kind to try to get it under control before we disintegrated into what Jimmy Carter got us into. My first house was an 18% home mortgage loan, 18% because of these people. So that's, we have to call them out for what they are. And I agree with you, Jake. We got to meet their fake policy views and fake ideas that they've been fed with the reality of the facts. And the facts are our ideas are good. And we got to show emotion when we say it and we put it in their face time and time again, especially the media types. I'll give you the last word, Jake.
Yeah, and that emotion shouldn't be smugness. You know, again, I keep referring to these No Kings rally videos because so many people made them, and these were brilliant people. They knew their facts. They knew that we would get a chuckle out of the interviews with these random protesters who didn't know what they were doing. But smugness doesn't produce a lot of enlightenment. It just makes you not happy. It's one of the reasons why I wasn't a fan of the original, of the old Cosby Show, because it seemed like every single episode was, and this is before the rape stuff. I didn't know any about that. It was every single episode was Bill Cosby smugly teaching the kids a lesson. I thought to myself, like, if that were my dad, I would run away from home. Like, there was no understanding. There was no real emotion there. You know, we should be looking at these people and not trying to show how stupid they are. They'll show that themselves. We don't have to worry about that. We need to show them that their emotions and their passion has been misdirected by people who are using them in many, many ways. And yet you talk about Bolshevism, the trigger man who they set up to shoot the czar and his family, they deliberately chose someone who they knew they could blame everything on him afterwards. His name was Joseph Yurovsky. You can look him up. They knew that because he was a Jew, that if things went south for them, they could say it was a Jewish thing. Absolutely. Same thing with some of these other people. They can say, oh, you were a crazy person. They'll abandon these people in a second if they feel that the country has shifted in a different way. And that's what we're seeing now. But eventually we're going to see the next, I don't want to say his name either, the next person who tries to shoot somebody, they might just turn into a John Brown because they'll be happy with him. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you may be right, but I hope not. We're going to still talk about it and keep out there trying to end this way of thinking because it doesn't help America. Thanks, Jake. We'll see you next time. And tomorrow's Truth Thursday. We may just do an open mic because my guest just dropped out. I'll see you then.